Nail in the Coffin, written by Sendril and read by K-Burb. This is a Danny Phantom Batman crossover fic, rated teen and up audiences, in which no archive warnings apply. It features the relationship between Danny Fenton / Jason Todd, as well as the characters of Danielle Danny Phantom, Valerie Gray, and Jazz Fenton. Chapter 1. Lay My Curses Out to Rest. You better back off, a young voice cries, coming from the alley below Jason. He jumps down almost without thought, landing between a child and two men creeping down the alley.
Evening,
he calls, voice distorted by his helmet. The word comes out as a threatening growl, and the two men pause. Jason doesn't give them the chance to do more than that. He doesn't want to use his guns in the presence of a frightened child, so he opts for hand-to-hand, rushing them before they can respond, clotheslining one and swiping the other's feet from beneath him. Two swift punches and they're down for the count. He quickly zip-ties them and drags them to the mouth of the alley, pinging Oracle for a pickup before turning back to the child. She's still standing right where she was, wary but clearly ready to fight. She's got a strange stance, like she's ready to jump, but her hands are up guarding her face like they should be. Jason approves. He approaches slowly, not wanting to scare her. Hey there, kiddo, he says, keeping his voice as soft as the helmet can make it. You all right? They didn't hurt you, did they? She shakes her head, not dropping her hands, still poised to jump away.
I'm Red Hood. Do you know what that means?
She nods slowly. You're a protector, she says, putting a strange emphasis on the word that has Jason pausing for a minute. After a moment, he agrees.
Yeah, I am. And right now, I'm protecting you.
She settles, just a little, hands lowering from her face. I'm Princess Ellie, she says, emphatic. Her voice is louder than it was before, like she's daring him to disagree. He smiles. That's adorable.
Well, Princess Ellie, I guess that makes me your knight.
Her eyes light up, and suddenly she's not a frightened soul in an alley, but an excited child. You're my knight? She asks, that strange emphasis returning. Jason nods, still smiling.
Sure am, Princess, he says.
My first knight, Princess Ellie cries, and that's when things go a bit sideways. See, Jason didn't mind calling the child Princess Ellie. He didn't mind being her knight. It makes him feel warm and fuzzy, happy to play pretend with a sweet little kid who he just rescued from a horrible fate. The glowing green rune circle that appears beneath his feet doesn't scream playing pretend at all. In fact, if he's got those runes right, it looks like a binding circle. Shit on a stick. This is not great. At least Princess Ellie looks happy. The binding circle fades, and Jason feels some kind of constraint settle on him, on what feels like his very soul. That's really not great. Come on, Princess Ellie says, running up to him and grabbing his hand. Let's go find Mama. And Jason turns and follows her without hesitation. Well, at least his body does. Jason himself has many, many hesitations, namely to the tune of, what the fuck was that magic circle? And, oh hell no, we gotta talk first. but his body just turns and follows the little princess. Okay, apparently there was a compulsion effect to the binding circle. That's just great. And now he's pretty sure she wasn't joking about her title. Normal, non-magical princess Rugrats wouldn't be able to bind and command the Red Hood, after all.
What's going on?
He asks, and he's horribly grateful that he still has his voice. The little princess gives him the most incredulous look he's ever seen on a 5-year-old. We're going to see Mama, silly. But we have to be real quiet, because I'm not supposed to be out here.
It's dangerous out here,
Jason finds himself saying. But this is just a knee-jerk reaction to a little child wandering Crime Alley at night, not any kind of compulsion. No, the compulsion seems to only apply to his body. He's still got his voice, and he's still got his mind. So that's 2 out of 3. Not as bad as it could be. Skip with me, Princess Ellie laughs, and Jason does. Okay, that's pretty fucking bad. Thankfully, it's late enough to almost be early again, and they keep to the lingering shadows, so he's pretty sure no one sees him. And if anyone does, they'll keep their mouth shut or lose their kneecaps. Princess Ellie and Red Hood skip through Crime Alley, right up to a crumbling apartment building. One of the many Jason actually owns. He rents them out on the cheap for people without much in the way of resources. The apartments come with their own furniture and appliances, and the rates are so low he has a waiting list a mile long. So her mama's not doing too well, Jason infers. How'd a magical princess end up in this situation? Shouldn't she have fairy godparents to help her out or something? Jason should maybe refrain from basing any of his ideas about this situation on fairy tales, but what else is he supposed to draw from? He just got magically compelled to skip through Crime Alley, for fuck's sake. Princess Ellie makes her way to the stairwell and hops up each step, Jason skipping right along, all the way up to the 4th floor. She's strong. Either that, or she's got a metric fuck ton of energy. Princess Ellie then stops on the 4th floor landing.
My brother's not here to distract Mama. He's with Auntie Jazz in Kneptibut.
So we gotta sneak, she tells Jason. And suddenly, Jason can't talk anymore. The door swings open soundlessly, odd for the age of the building, Jason notes, and they creep through the hallway until they reach apartment 407. Ellie tries to turn the knob quietly, but almost instantly it's ripped out of her hand, and Jason lays eyes on the most gorgeous man he's ever seen. Hair as dark as a raven's wing, eyes as bright as an early spring sky, skin pale as the moon. He's big, bigger than Jason and built, and if Jason saw him at a bar, he'd definitely shoot his shot. But right now, this man is probably a threat. Which is a shame, because he's an absolute snack. The man looks frantic as he opens the door, but when he sees Princess Ellie, the fear fades away. Ellie, he shouts, scooping her up into his arms and holding her tight while she squirms. What were you thinking? Where did you go?
I was going to get some cereal. We're out,
Princess Ellie whines, kicking her little legs and flailing her arms. She's still got a tight hold of Jason's hand, and his arm wiggles oddly through the air as she flails.
But look, Mama,
Princess Ellie says, apparently reminded of Jason's existence by his hand in hers.
I got my first knight.
She sounds so proud, but the way the man's lovely blue eyes snap to Jason reads a threat assessment. The man takes in his helmet, clearly clocks who he is, and relaxes all at once with a sigh. Oh boy, the man says, running a hand through his hair. You'd better come in. And Jason does. He still can't talk, still can't move on his own. All he has left is his mind, and it's awful. He steps inside, but no further. He has at least that much control. And that's about when the man clues in that something's wrong. Oh, he says, setting Princess Ellie down on the floor.
Oh shit, you're bound. You're bound, Ellie!
What? She asks, innocent as an angel. I asked if he was my knight, and he said yes.
The man frowns at her. You know that's not how it's supposed to work, young lady. Princess Ellie rolls her eyes. Go to your room.
What? Princess Ellie yells, hands on her hips. That isn't fair.
Now, Ellie, the man says, and Princess Ellie's eyes start to water.
No, she warbles. He's my knight.
The man sighs again and gets down on one knee. Ellie, sweetheart, that's not how it works. We only bind the willing, little love. Princess Ellie's eyes well up with tears.
But he's my knight, Mama.
No, sweetheart, he isn't. And just like that, Jason feels the binding break. It shatters, ripples resounding through his being, and he drops to his knees, gasping for air. There's a hand on his shoulder and two little hands gripping his arms, and all he can do is breathe. Let's get you to the couch, Mr. Hood. The man hooks his hands through Jason's armpits and pulls him up to his feet. Like it's easy to lift a man as big as Jason.
Well, when you're the size of this man, it probably is.
The man helps him over to a comfy-looking couch and settles him there, gently arranging him so he's seated with his head between his knees. Deep breaths, my guy, the man says. It'll pass. Your core is just adjusting to the freedom. Jason takes deep breaths and tries not to resent the man for his logical instruction and his nonsensical explanation. The fuck is a core?
The fuck is a core?
He rasps in a tight breath. Ellie gasps. It's weird not to think of her as Princess Ellie, but apparently that was part of the compulsion too. Scary.
You said a bad word, Mr. Hood, she cries.
And Jason just knows that if he looked up at her, she'd be pointing wildly in his direction. Mr. Hood is a grown-up. He's allowed to say grown-up words, the man says, like he's had this conversation many times before. And I believe I sent you to your room, Ellie. Ellie grumps a bit more while Jason just sits and catches his breath, but pretty soon she stomps off into the rest of the apartment. Jason hears a door slam, and then he and the man are alone. The man sighs yet again. I'm so sorry for all of this. I didn't even know she snuck out until just a few minutes ago, he says. Jason manages to raise his head, wincing at the sore feeling in his chest. The man winces in sympathy. I'm Danny, by the way, he says, waving awkwardly at Jason from across the coffee table. He's sitting in an armchair that's seen better days, one leg bouncing up and down from the nerves. What's a core? Jason repeats, and Danny smacks one hand into the other. Right. Crash course on ghosts and ghost-adjacent beings. Here we go. He speaks so quickly, Jason's afraid he isn't hearing him right, and he must not be, because he could have sworn Danny said, all ghosts and ghost-adjacent beings have what's known as a core. It's like a heart, brain, and soul all combined into one. It's the essence of who we are. And Ellie, bless her heart, bound yours. Specifically, she bound you to serve as her knight.
And what does that mean?
Jason says, his voice grating horribly. Danny stands and makes his way into the kitchen. That means she offered you a job as her protector, and you accepted, Danny says, over the sound of the fridge opening and closing. He comes back with a sealed water bottle, which he hands to Jason. Jason considers not drinking, not really wanting to remove his helmet and expose his identity, but that is what his domino is for. He takes off his helmet and sets it right beside himself, opening the water and downing half in one long pull. And now? Jason asks, his voice much clearer now. Now the binding is gone. I broke it. Danny says, smiling politely. He looks like he knows what's coming next. How'd you do that? Jason already has his suspicions, but he'd like Danny to confirm them. Well, Ellie might be a princess, Danny says, and then a bright ring of light forms around his waist. The light splits and sweeps over his form, revealing a being dressed in courtly raiment, a crown of blue flames floating atop his white hair, vivid green eyes flashing in the low light. But I'm the king. Jason nods slowly. I'm not here to cause trouble, though, Danny says, transforming back into his human form with another flash of those bright rings. Well, your kid had already caused enough trouble, Jason says, unable to think of anything else to say. Danny frowns. What did Ellie do? Other than compelling you, I mean. That's bad enough, but did she do something else? She made me skip through Crime Alley, Jason growls. That was humiliating. Danny valiantly does not laugh. It's obviously a struggle, but he manages. Jason appreciates that. Really, he does. He's also just still a bit angry. It's not funny, he scowls. It's a little bit funny, Danny replies, his voice choked from holding back laughter. Well, that's just great for you, Jason says, quite a bit miffed. Sorry, Danny says, coughing the last of his laughter away.
Can I come out yet?
A distant voice calls from Ellie's room. Are you sorry yet? Danny calls back.
No,
Ellie yells. Danny raises an eyebrow. Two more minutes then, he says. There's a disgruntled sound and something thuds against the door, but Ellie stays in her room like she's supposed to. So, Danny says, leaning back in his armchair, we've got 2 minutes for an explanation, which is really not enough time for all the things I have to discuss with you. What are you doing later this morning? Sleeping, Jason says. He isn't going to make this easy for Danny, regardless of how attractive he is. Danny's the one who owes him an explanation. He shouldn't be the one to set the time for their meeting. What did you mean by ghost-adjacent beings? Danny cringes. That's going to be a really long conversation. And unless you want to have Princess Ellie interjecting and derailing the conversation every other word, we should really have this conversation when she's at school. Jason huffs. Danny's making logical points, and he kinda hates it. Fine. Tomorrow at noon, Jason says shortly, his voice a low growl. He pretends not to see the way Danny's pupils dilate at the sound. The cafe on Fifth. You know it? Danny shakes his head. No, but I'm sure the internet does. I'll meet you there at noon. Jason stands and instantly finds himself alarmingly lightheaded. He sways as his vision whites out, and when he comes back to himself, he finds Danny's holding him upright. Careful there, Mr. Hood, Danny says, not laughing at all now. He looks concerned. You still aren't 100% yet. Your core is strained. You sure you don't want to sit for a bit longer? You can even take a nap if you need to. Like Jason would take a nap in some strange king's apartment, even if said king is being very accommodating about this whole thing. No, he grits out, pulling away from Danny and standing strong on his own. All right, Danny says, hands still outstretched, as if to catch Jason if he stumbles. Jason slowly makes his way to the door, hearing Ellie's door open just as he reaches it. No, my knight! Ellie cries, and there's a sudden thundering of tiny feet across the apartment. Jason braces himself as best as he can while so shaky, and turns to hopefully keep from being knocked over by a 5-year-old. His dignity would never recover. Not that he's got much dignity left tonight, after literally skipping through Crime Alley. But when he manages to turn himself around, he sees that Danny's scooped Ellie up from the floor, holding her under one arm while she struggles and kicks. No! She screeches, and Danny gives Jason an exasperated look. I'll see you at noon, he says, and then turns his full attention to scolding his child. Jason trusts the king about as far as he can throw him, but he can throw him a fair way, he thinks. Not right now, but definitely when he's back to normal. He'll be able to throw Danny around. Probably. He at least trusts Danny to hold on to his daughter. So Jason makes his escape from the apartment to the sound of Danny lecturing Ellie about consent and bindings. When Jason shuts the door, Danny's voice cuts out almost entirely. Ellie's response does not.
But he's my knight!
She all but screams, and Jason decides to make a hasty exit, just in case Danny doesn't manage to hold on to her after all. He realizes then that he left his helmet on the couch, but he's got a domino on, and he doesn't want to chance getting caught by the magical toddler's binding circle again. Who let the toddler have the power to bind people to her will anyway? He wonders. Are those two even human? And didn't she say she had a brother? What fresh hell have I stumbled ass backwards into? It's these thoughts that drive him down the stairs, and he can't summon much more brain power than that on his way. He's actually concerningly out of it, he's realizing, but it's not like he could have accepted Danny's offer of a nap, either. He just hopes none of his enemies are waiting between here and his closest safe house, because he's pretty sure even a normal 5-year-old could get a drop on him right now. Jason steps outside the apartment building and, like his thoughts summoned them, he suddenly swarmed with white figures. I'm never going to live this down, he thinks, as the men in black rejects spray something in his face that burns his skin. He gasps in pain, and the stuff gets into his lungs, sending him spiraling down into unconsciousness. Move in, he hears, and then all goes quiet and dark. When Jason wakes, his lungs are still burning fiercely, and he's trapped. There is a dim green light around him, and he can just barely see a little window maybe 2 inches in front of his face. But when he tries to move, his hands don't even have enough space to reach for it. His breath quickens. He's in... No, not again. He's in a box. The box is harsh on the back of his hands, and this time he can't even raise his hands up enough to claw at the lid. He's in a coffin. There's a groan from right beside his ear, and that's when he realizes he isn't alone. What? The voice says, and it's familiar, but in his growing panic, Jason can't place it. He whines high in his throat, wheezing breaths that he knows he should be saving. With the two of them in the coffin, the air is going to run out even faster, and he needs to calm down, but his breath is picking up speed, and he kicks his feet with the little room he has. The coffin makes an odd clanging noise against his steel cap boots, and the noise startles the person lying beside him. They're tucked all around him, underneath him, Jason realizes, squirming in place to try to press back from the lid of the coffin. There's nowhere to go. He pushes his hands uselessly against the lid, painfully turning them around to scratch at the metal. Wah, the voice slurs, right below his ear, and Jason doesn't want to admit that he whimpers in response, but he does. Hey, the voice says. Hood, right? The voice is strained, trying to stay calm but clearly starting to panic. It's Danny, from earlier. Where are we? What's happening? Coffin, Jason manages, his teeth almost catching his tongue on the word. Shit, Danny says, and when he shifts, he presses Jason fully up against the coffin lid, every inch of him shoved tightly against cold metal. Jason screams, suddenly terrified out of his mind, and Danny goes tense below him, still pushing him into the unforgiving metal, Jason loses a bit of time then, his mind caught in the horror of being buried anew, the press of the coffin on all sides sending him spiraling. Not again, not again, not again, not again, not again, not again, not again! He's not sure what happens then, but he comes back to himself with a taste of blood and vomit in his mouth, tears and snot sticky on his face, and a soothing humming beneath himself. Come on, he hears, soft words breathed out just behind his ear. Come back to me. You're all right. I'm here. And somehow, between the humming below him and the voice crooning sweetly to him, he manages to gasp in some air. That's it, the voice encourages. Just breathe. The chest beneath him doesn't rise and fall, so there's no way to base his own breathing on it, but he's gradually, ever so gradually, able to slow his breathing. He's still gasping every few seconds, but the voice, Danny, is doing his best to keep him calm. And eventually, Jason slumps down, every muscle in his body going lax, completely exhausted in that dark and horrible space. I can't, he tries to croak. You're all right. We'll be all right, Danny says, whisper quiet in the dark. Jason says, words getting stuck in his throat. They got us, but Ellie got away. She'll bring reinforcements. Don't worry, Danny soothes, and Jason can feel something strange. There are hands squirming around in the tight confines of the coffin, and his breath starts to quicken again at the reminder that they're trapped. But before he can really panic, the hands worm their way up and over his hips, and Danny grasps his hands. Jason grips back, tight enough that he's sure he's breaking something, but Danny doesn't say anything. We'll be all right, Hood. I promise. My word is your king. We'll be all right. Jason whimpers, squeezing his hands tighter. He hears a sharp crack, but Danny doesn't make a sound. There's nothing more in the dim green light of the coffin, just the window 2 inches from his face, the metal that presses against him each time he moves, and Danny's hands in his. And then Danny starts to speak. My favorite star is called Tabby's Star, Danny whispers, like they're children in the dark at a sleepover or something. Like they aren't trapped in a coffin, buried underground and left there to rot. Like they aren't going to die here. Alone and unnoticed and, oh, not again. Not again, please. Dad, where are you? It's also called Boyajin's Star, or the WTF Star, Danny continues, and Jason focuses on the sound of his voice. Anything to drown out the terrified screaming in his head. It has unusual fluctuations in brightness, up to 22%, if you can believe that. This was first noticed by citizen astronomers as part of the Planet Hunters project using the Kepler telescope. Danny keeps talking, his low voice smooth and quiet in Jason's ear. Whenever he stops talking, Jason can't stop himself from whimpering and squeezing his hands. His world narrows down to Danny's hands in his, Danny's voice in his ear, and after a while he shuts his eyes, even though he's terrified of the darkness behind his eyelids. It's better than staring at the window in the coffin, at least. Danny keeps talking until his voice breaks and breaks again. And still, he keeps talking. Pretty soon, he's croaking out his words, and Jason can barely understand him. Danny stops talking, clears his throat a few times, but all that comes out is a wheezing rasp of breath and a dry throat. Jason whimpers, tears starting to streak down his face again. And his breath starts to hitch in his throat. He can feel his panic building all over again. Danny clears his throat one last time. And this time, when he speaks, he doesn't talk about stars. Can you feel your core, Hood? He rasps. And Jason doesn't understand why he's asking now, of all times. But the question causes him to focus on that center part of himself, just for a moment. And then he feels something. Feels like a humming, coming from below him, but at the same time it feels like freedom and flying high and elation. He takes a full breath for the first time since he woke up. There you are, Danny groans, his voice pained and quiet.
That's your core. You have one, just the same as I do. Listen. Listen to it. And Hood does. His core whispers to him about open meadows and starry skies and hot chocolate with marshmallows. All soft things. All good things. It's because we're the same, you and I, Danny finds the energy to say, whispering into the dim green light around them. And Hood, we may have come back wrong, but at least we came back. We came back. We'll come back from this, too. And Jason's core hums with hope and surety and a promise. Jason can feel himself relaxing, and he still isn't sure what's happening, but he's so, so grateful. And then, suddenly, his core goes quiet. Jason whines and grips Danny's hands tight, but Danny shushes him patiently. They're here, he says. It won't be long now, Hood. I promise it won't be long. Danny keeps murmuring to Jason, telling him that he'll be all right, that they're almost out, that it really won't be long now. And it isn't. Between one word and the next, the lid of the coffin is ripped off with a screech, and Jason throws himself out of the coffin on shaky limbs, coughing and retching as he pushes past their savior and falls to the ground, crawling as far away from the coffin as he can. He feels hands on his back, firm and sure, and he groans in response, sobbing and gasping against the ground. He can feel himself being lifted from the ground, but when he looks, it isn't his dad. It's Danny, looking at him with such concern and care that it makes Jason sob anew, curling into himself as tight as he can, still wheezing for breath. There's blood flecking Danny's shirt beneath Jason's mouth, he sees, and with each shuddering, sobbing exhale, fresh speckles mist out of his mouth. Blood blossoms, Danny's saying, and Jason's hearing must be fading in and out because he doesn't catch much more than that. Take him. Jason whines at that, grabbing onto Danny as tightly as his bloody hands will allow. He doesn't want Danny to go anywhere. Doesn't want him to leave him alone. I don't want to be alone. Right, Hood, I'm here. It's all, he hears, and he slumps into Danny's hold, still gripping him tight. He barely registers that there's someone else in the room with them, but he doesn't care about them right now. As long as they don't try to put him back into the coffin, he doesn't care who they are or what they're doing. Danny has him. Danny's got him. His chest, his core, can feel Danny's, and it hums soothingly against him, promising him safety and peace. Jason's vision is starting to fade in and out, and he faintly hears Danny talking again. Rest, he hears, and so he does. Chapter 2, Make a Mercy Out of Me. Jason drifts through a haze, dreaming of green seas and summer skies, starry nights and hot chocolate with marshmallows, his motorcycle rumbling strong beneath him while wind blows past his face. He rests, and he dreams, and he doesn't see the figures rushing to and fro around him, the yetis and the humans and the ghosts alike all fighting to keep him half alive. He only wakes when Danny tries to leave him, and even then, he wakes only enough to whine and grip Danny tighter. He drifts right back under when Danny settles at his side. He isn't leaving him. Danny will keep him safe. So Jason sleeps, and sleeps, and sleeps. And when he finally wakes, he's somewhere else entirely. He's in someone's bedroom, dark paint on the walls, wrapped up in a purple blanket, and there's an IV in his arm connected to a bag of Lazarus waters. Jason goes to rip the IV out of his arm, horrified, but a hand catches his own and forces him to stop. He's weak enough that he can't yank his hand away, but when he looks up at his captor, it's Danny.
Jason remembers their time in the coffin as a blur of fear and a soothing voice. But now Danny's stopping him from saving himself from the pit, and he doesn't understand what's happening. "What's going on?" he rasps, throat dry, still trying to yank his hand away. "Let go of me!" There are fucking Lazarus waters hooked up to him like a saline drip, and he needs that shit out of him yesterday. He tries to yank his hand out of Danny's grip, and when he can't, he starts going for the IV line with his teeth. Danny yelps and somehow levers his leg up and onto the bed in a move that would have impressed Dick, and he pulls the line out of Jason's reach with his foot. "You had an ectoparasite hood," Danny says, and Jason doesn't know what that means or what that has to do with fucking pit water. "Get off me," he shouts, the words tearing at his dry throat. Danny instead reaches over to the bedside table and retrieves a water bottle. He braces the bottle between his knee and the arm of his chair, breaks the seal one-handed, and lifts the water to Jason's face. "Drink," he says, and tips the bottle enough that Jason either has to drink or let the water spill. He drinks begrudgingly, still wanting to yank away, slaking his thirst and trying to get Danny's guard down in one move. Danny doesn't release his hand, though, and he doesn't move his foot. He just sets the water to the side once Jason's had enough and keeps Jason's hand tightly held in his own. "I know it's scary," he says, and Jason scoffs. "Scary? It's not scary, it's maddening." "You don't know anything," Jason says, gearing up for a whole rant about the Lazarus pits and what exactly Danny is meddling with here. He doesn't get a chance to deliver. "No, you don't know anything. You don't even know what was wrong with you in the first place," Danny shouts, and something in Jason cringes away in fear. Jason resolutely ignores it and doesn't flinch. Danny runs a hand through his hair and sighs. "Sorry I yelled," he sighs again. "After Red Huntress broke us out, you collapsed. Do you remember?" Jason nods, not wanting to remember anything else about that morning. Is it still the same morning? Shit, how long was he out for? "That was due to the blood blossoms," Danny says, slowly putting his leg back down and moving the conversation past a point that Jason would really like to discuss. "Thanks." "How long was I out for?" he asks, voice a little clearer after the water. 3 days. Danny says, and Jason immediately attempts to lever himself out of the bed. "Whoa, slow your roll, my guy," Danny says, pushing Jason back down onto the bed with his free hand. It shouldn't be that easy for Danny to do that, but it totally, obviously, is. "I've got to get out of here," Jason says, still straining against Danny's hand on his chest. Danny only needs one hand to pin him to the bed. It's a little distracting, but only a little, because the vast majority of Jason's brain power is currently devoted to getting out of here. "No, you don't," Danny counters. "You've got to stay with me and get that ectoparasite taken care of." He nods to the IV bag of glowing green liquid suspended out of Jason's reach. "My doctor gave us this batch of ectoplasm. Says it's clean of any negative emotions. And that's what you need right now, baby ghost." He has no idea what ectoplasm is, but seriously, did this motherfucker just call him a baby? "Did you just call me a baby, motherfucker?" "You are one," Danny says, completely serious. In ghost terms, at least. "Your core is all messed up, which means you aren't really even a baby ghost yet. More of a fetus ghost, but that just sounds wrong." And then, before Jason can even attempt to process the bullshit that just came out of Danny's mouth, there's a sound from the hall. They both glance over, and in the doorway stands some kind of enhanced individual, but not one Jason's ever seen before. She's covered head to toe in futuristic red armor, with some kind of board strapped to her back and a gun on her hip that Jason would be eager to get his hands on in other circumstances. Right now, he's a little wary she might turn that gun on him. This must be the Red Huntress Danny mentioned earlier. Danny, she says, stepping into the room, what did I tell you about explanations? Danny sighs. Not to give them? Red Huntress walks up to the side of the bed. And what were you just doing? Danny makes a face at her, but quickly answers when she shifts her weight. Explaining things, he yelps, twitching away like she's going to hit him or shoot him. She doesn't seem picky. Red Huntress snorts and turns to Jason. He wasn't explaining shit, was he? Jason shakes his head, and Danny makes an affronted face at him. Betrayal, he says, but Jason's kind of done with him for now. Explain, he demands, and Red Huntress pops her hip out, hand inching towards her gun. You want to try that again? She asks, and Jason knows a threat when he hears one. He's currently being held down in a medical bed, in comfortable clothes that he knows aren't holding any of his weapons. He clears his throat. Explain? He asks this time. Better, Red Huntress says. And then she says the most batshit sentence he's ever heard. You were brought back to life by some real fucked up shit version of ectoplasm, and it's been latched onto your core as a parasite ever since. Her next sentence is even worse. Danny's half-ghost, and you're ghost adjacent, and that means you fall under the protection of the Ghost King. Danny waves and points to himself, mouthing, that's me. It's wild, completely batshit, but it's a hell of a lot better of an explanation than Danny managed, that's for sure. And then Red Huntress continues. We rescued you from that coffin.
No, not that, not again, never again, please.
But the air was filled with blood blossom dust, which hurts ghosts and ghost adjacent beings. And since you were already suffering from your parasite, it hurt you more than it should have. She eyes him from behind her helmet, and then seems to decide that she should continue. It would have killed you all the way if we hadn't gotten you to the far frozen. Jason leans back a little at the news. They could be lying, of course, but then he gets a sudden memory of blood spraying from his mouth as he coughed, and he has a feeling that she's actually downplaying how close he came to his second death. And he may still be angry, but he knows better than to be ungrateful to people who rescued him. And he hasn't thanked Danny for what he did before, either, and that shit Jason unfortunately does remember. Thanks, he says, looking from Red Huntress to Danny. Thank you for saving me. Red Huntress nods like his thanks is her due, but Danny smiles at him. Of course, he says. How could we do anything else? Lots of people would have left me to rot, Jason says. And while he still isn't exactly chill with the heat water being pumped into his veins, he's at least willing to let them explain. Let Red Huntress explain, that is. Apparently, Danny's terrible at it. Danny's eyes flashes nonchalant words. Not us, he growls, and Jason feels himself perk up and take interest. He's always had a thing for dangerous guys with kind hearts, and Danny's size and strength are another check on his list of definite likes. Jason wouldn't have expected intravenous pit waters to be playing into his danger kink, but hell, his life is weird enough already. Might as well throw some fucked up sexuality in there, too. He clears his throat, and when he looks up, Red Huntress is smirking at him. Well, fuck you too, Red Huntress. He can't help if he finds Danny attractive. Danny, the very strong, very big, very kind-hearted king. The guy who helped him survive a coffin, fuck, and got him medical care for a problem Jason didn't even know he had. That's what he should be actually focusing on right now. But his mind is still a bit scattered, so he'll give himself a pass for his distraction. He focuses on what's actually important right now. Explain the pit waters in the IV. Danny and Red Huntress share a look. Pit waters? Red Huntress asks. Lazarus pit waters. Jason carefully enunciates, and he sees the light bulb go on in their eyes. Oh, that's where your ecto came from. No wonder, Danny says, with a disgusted look on his face. No, that's not what's in here. This is clean ectoplasm. Not that corrupted Lazarus shit. Jason just blinks at him. Corrupted. Red Huntress sighs and explains, we've been cleaning up pools of corrupted ectoplasm, and we've heard them referred to as Lazarus, but that isn't what we're giving you. Your pit waters are contaminated with hundreds of years of really awful emotions, and that corrupted them over time. She hums, then asks, that's what you had contact with, right? A big pit of bubbling green goo? Jason nods slowly. I was thrown in one. Both Danny and Red Huntress flinch. That would explain it, Danny says. Jason doesn't even have to ask. Red Huntress fills him in on Danny's thought process immediately. You have an ectoparasite latched onto your core. It makes sense that it would have come from the corrupted ectoplasm you encountered. Jason lays back against his pillows. It's a lot to consider. Does it make you feel anything? Danny asks, concerned. Do you ever have emotions and impulses that aren't your own? Yeah, Jason croaks, mortified to feel his throat closing with emotion. It gives me pit rage. Danny winces again, but Red Huntress just nods. This will help with that. She taps the bag of clean ectoplasm with another nod. It'll take a while. You'll need multiple infusions over a series of days, but this will slowly force the parasite out of your body. It should be completely gone in a couple of weeks, by our doctor's estimate. A couple of weeks and it'll be gone. Jason can't figure out exactly what his emotions are right now, but there are a lot of them. He takes a moment to parse through what he's feeling. It's some strange mixture of relief and grief and elation, and it steals his voice and hitches his breath. He shuts his eyes against the swell and lets it wash over him for a moment. He never dared to hope he'd ever be free of the pit. To have his freedom offered to him on a silver platter is entirely overwhelming. There's a hand in his suddenly, and Jason knows it's Danny. His hand feels the same as it did in the coffin, strong and sure and there, and Jason squeezes it tight. Thanks, he manages. We can help you, so we will. Danny says it so strongly, like there would never be a world in which they wouldn't help Jason. Jason squeezes his hand again. He's starting to believe that Danny means what he says. We'll let you get some rest, Red Huntress says, and Jason hears her making her way out the door. Danny goes to release his hand, and Jason has a sudden flashback to the coffin, to the dark and claustrophobic press of the metal around him, to the way Danny's hands and his was one of the only things keeping him sane. He gasps in a breath and snaps his eyes open, latching tightly onto Danny's hand with panic strength. Whoa, Danny says, like Jason is some kind of horse he has to soothe. And Jason chokes out a strained laugh at himself. Hey, it's all right. Danny sits back down, scooting his chair closer to Jason's side. I'm not going anywhere, he says. I'm here, Hood. Jason croaks. He already knows his domino is gone, and since Danny lives in Gotham, it's not like he can't find out Jason's identity with just a glance at the newspaper. I'm here, Jason. Danny instantly corrects himself, stroking over Jason's hand with his thumb. Just lay back and relax. Jason tries, but his body is still flooded with adrenaline. He feels his pulse racing, and he groans in frustration at himself. This is pathetic, he hisses under his breath. No, it's not, Danny says, firm and sure. This is perfectly valid, Jason. Jason scoffs. No, listen to me. You think I don't have flashbacks? Danny asks, tightening his grip on Jason until Jason meets his eyes again. You think I deal with my trauma any differently? I go through the same shit, Jason. You're not alone in this room, and you're not alone in your trauma. I get it, okay? I'm right there with you. Jason finds his breath coming just a little easier, hearing that. It doesn't solve anything, doesn't fix Jason's panic and trauma, doesn't change what happened to him. But it helps to know he's truly not alone. Is there anything you need right now? Denny asks. It's okay if there isn't, or if you can't think of anything. But if there's anything you need, I'll get it for you. Danny's eyes are focused on Jason's, and he finds himself nodding. He remembers Danny's voice, his core humming away, pulling Jason's mind somewhere safe and kind. He wants that again. Tell me about the stars. And Danny smiles, and his core hums an answer. I'd be happy to. He talks about the stars until Jason is drooping with exhaustion. And this time, when he closes his eyes, Danny's soothing voice follows him down into the dark. He wakes, alone, to a siren going off outside the room he's in. His IV is out, he realizes, as he instinctively rolls off the bed and lands in a crouch, shaking his head to chase the dizziness from his skull. He needs to figure out what the siren is for, and he needs to figure it out fast, because in his life, a siren isn't typically a good thing. A siren usually means some kind of attack. He's willing to bet it means the same here. Wherever here is. He opens the door to head out of the room he woke in and finds himself in a tasteful hallway. There are stairs down the corridor, so he runs down the hall and down the stairs. There's no one in sight. He makes it all the way to the front door without seeing anyone, but once he opens the door, there's a chaotic mass of people outside. Some of the people are glowing. Some are flying, and all of them are fighting. Well, not all of them. There are two small figures on the massive lawn of the house Jason's leaving. He's pretty sure one is Princess Ellie, but the other child, the one closer to Jason, is new. Both children are dodging blasts from the hands of one of the floating figures. He sees Danny, back in his kingly form, zipping through the air and shooting glowing green bolts from his hands at another flying person. This one is firing the pink blast the children are dodging. Ellie's using the trees at the far side of the lawn as cover, which is helping her, but the new kid is almost on the house's steps, and he isn't so lucky. Just as Jason goes to take a step onto the lawn and join the fray, one of the pink blasts catches the new child unaware. It lands right in front of him, and he gets blasted off his feet, flying toward Jason with a startled cry. Dante! He hears Danny yell, and Jason instinctively jumps to catch the kid, diving over the grass and dirt. Dante lands in his arms and he rolls, popping up and into a run to avoid any additional blasts. There's a furious roar behind him, but Jason doesn't look back, running with the kid until he's pretty sure they're out of range. When he looks back, Danny has his hands locked with the pink blast guy. Red Huntress has Ellie on her hoverboard, and the other flying figures are placed between Jason and the pink guy. Fucking Fruit Loop, the child in his arms curses, and Jason glances down at him in surprise. He's always trying something. He doesn't look hurt, just annoyed, and Jason's attention immediately turns back to the fight. Does Danny need help? Jason asks. And the child scoffs, sounding just like the demon brat. Not from you, he says. Rude little scamp, Jason approves. Kid's got a good spine. Out of the corner of his eye, he sees Dante looking him up and down, the boy apparently unconcerned with the fight still going on not so far away. You're the one who's gonna marry Mama, the little kid says. What? Jason says. Intelligently, a fair bit more distracted from the fight now. The child rolls his eyes. I'm Prince Dante, he says, with the sassiest look Jason's ever seen on a child. You're gonna marry Mama. Jason says, even more intelligently. Look, he just woke up to absolute madness going on right outside the door. He's not quite firing on all cylinders yet. He at least saved a child, That's gotta count for something, right? When he looks back up at the fight, he's just in time to see the pink blast guy getting absorbed in a bright green light and sucked into some kind of futuristic container that Red Huntress is holding. Everyone on the impromptu battlefield breathes a sigh of relief, wrapping up the fight by floating or flying down to the ground and breaking out the first aid kits. Jason runs over, still holding Prince Dante in his arms. The boy makes no attempt to get down, and instead wraps his arms around Jason's neck, clearly content to be carried. Mama! Dante calls when they're close enough, and when Danny's head snaps up from where he's getting patched up, Jason has the strangest urge to cover Dante's mouth. I brought you your future husband, Dante yells, and Danny turns bright red. Ah, yes, that would be a good reason to have covered the kiddo's mouth. Dante, Danny shouts, flying across the ground towards them. I remember we have the same type, so if I think he's good looking, you definitely do too. Danny finally reaches them, covering Dante's mouth with one hand and scooping him out of Jason's arms with the other. Dante doesn't let go of Jason, and he ends up being tugged closer to Danny as a result. Dante is far too pleased by this outcome. Danny suddenly yelps and lets go. You bit me, he shouts, shaking out his bitten hand. You weren't listening, dipshit, Dante shouts back, still with his arms wrapped tightly around Jason's neck. I brought your future husband over. Don't call Mama a dipshit, Dante. Danny scolds, and the tired tone to his voice tells Jason that this is a very common argument between them. Don't be a dipshit then, dipshit, Dante says, sticking his tongue out. Danny then tickles Dante under his armpits, and Dante shrieks in Jason's ear and lets go of him in surprise. Jason quickly steps out of range and watches as Danny pins the squirming child to his hip. Sorry about that, Danny says. He means well. Do you want to be Papa or Dad? Dante asks Jason, completely serious. Jason just blinks at him. I like Papa, Princess Ellie cheers from where she's perched on Red Huntress's hoverboard. What do you think? You like Papa? Red Huntress asks him, grinning down at them like a shark. Please kill me now, Danny groans, transforming back from his regal gear to his more human look with a bright flash of light. We've been there. We did that already, Dante says nonchalantly, rolling his eyes over that extremely concerning statement. Danny sighs. Jason, Dante. Dante, Jason, he says, still holding tightly to his squirming Dante. Charmed, Jason says. Hi, Papa, Dante says, grinning back. Danny sighs again. Let's hope you don't meet the rest of my family. Jason side-eyes Danny, but he isn't paying him attention at the moment. No, he's too busy attempting to wrangle Dante. Dante, will you stop? He grunts as Dante finally kicks free, catching Danny right in the groin with a well-placed heel. Dante runs off to Red Huntress and Ellie's cheers. Red Huntress swoops down and lifts Dante up onto her hoverboard, and with a child clinging to each leg, she takes off across the sky. Traitors! The lot of them! Danny wheezes, crouched over and curling in on himself. Jason tentatively pats his back. There, there, Mama, he says. At least you know they take after you. He's always one to kick a man while he's down, after all. Danny wheezes out a laugh before straightening with a wince. Just in time to take a fighting stance as a large shape bursts out of the trees. Jason whirls around, putting Danny safely behind him and out of harm's way. At least, he thinks that's out of harm's way. He quickly restructures his plans when he sees the tricked-out RV bearing down at them. It barrels across the lawn so quickly, Jason barely has time to grab Danny and fling them both out of the way, pulling the big man after him with an arm around his waist. Their feet clear the mirror on the RV with inches to spare, and they crash down into the dirt and roll clumsily to a stop, Jason on top of Danny in the torn-up earth. He looks down to see Danny, head clearly spinning from their roll across the dirt, and he's about to say something when he hears the sound of the RV's door being kicked open. Ghost! A very large man in an orange hazmat suit bellows, leaping out of the RV with a massive gun in his hands. He's followed by a smaller woman in a teal hazmat suit, leaping much more gracefully out the door and tucking into a roll, coming up with her own massive gun, aimed to cover the man's blind spots. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad, Danny calls, waving from the ground. Hi, sweetie, Danny's mother calls back, not even giving him a glance. Seen any spooks? Jason gives Danny a very brief, incredulous glance. Nope, Danny chirps, and both his parents deflate with huge sighs. There's a rumble of another vehicle, and a station wagon comes tearing onto the lawn, following the tracks left by the RV. The driver's door is slammed open, and a tall redhead climbs out from behind the wheel. Mom! Dad! She yells, and Danny's parents wince. We were not finished with our discussion. But, Princess, a ghost set off the Fenton sensor. We would have caught one and shown you the truth. The redhead's eyes narrow, and she stomps over to her parents. The truth is that ghosts are sentient, sapient, and just as feeling as you or me. She grabs each parent by the wrist and marches them over to the station wagon. We are going home. And you are going to sit and listen to my presentation. And maybe this time you'll listen. She doesn't pay Jason and Danny any mind at all. Just shoves her parents into the car and backs away down the lawn until she's out of sight. Jason is speechless. And that was Mom, Dad, and my older sister, Jazz. You'd better hope you don't meet them properly. But aren't you the Ghost King? Jason manages, dumbfounded. Yup, Danny says, sounding unconcerned. And your parents hunt ghosts. Yep, Danny says, drawing out the sound and popping the pee. And I thought my relationship with my dad was terrible. Sorry to hear about that, Danny says, and then he puts a hand on Jason's waist. On his waist. Because Jason's still lying on top of him. He turns back to see Danny grinning at him, and when Jason very smoothly pushes himself up and off the king lying beneath him, Danny starts to laugh. Jason doesn't offer him a hand up just for that. Yeah, yeah, Jason says, brushing himself down as best as he can. His comfortable clothes are all covered in dirt and bits of grass. And he feels a bit bad, because they're definitely not his clothes. In fact, they're a little big on him. Don't worry about it, Danny says as he hauls himself up to his feet, watching as Jason scratches at a grass stain. If it doesn't come out in the wash, I won't really care. Fuck knows I'm hard enough on my clothes as it is. Ah, so he's wearing Danny's clothes. Makes sense, he decides, looking Danny over again. Danny's not that much bigger than Jason is, but apparently it's enough to make his clothes fit just a little loose. It definitely doesn't get Jason a little hot under the collar, knowing that not only is he in Danny's clothes, but having proof that Danny's noticeably bigger than him. He clears his throat and steers his mind into safer waters. So, your parents, how do you keep them from catching you? He asks. Nice deflection, Jason. Go right for the painful memories. But Danny surprises him by laughing again. They're terrible ghost hunters, he says, walking toward the haphazardly parked RV and motioning for Jason to follow. And pretty terrible parents, too. He opens the door to the RV and immediately fires off a green blast from his hand, frying a device just as it starts to twist around and take aim. There's a beat of silence, and then Danny pulls himself up and into the RV. I've given up on them,
he says sadly. But Jazz is convinced she can show them the error of their ways, so she keeps trying every time she visits. If you've given up on them, why are you even here now? And where is here, anyway? Jason asks, realizing he probably should have asked a whole the hell lot sooner, like maybe back when he first woke up. Getting told he had an ectoparasite kind of did a number on him, though, so he's going to give himself a pass on that one. Speaking of answers he should be getting, though. And who was that you were fighting? Danny moves to the driver's seat as he answers. One, we're here because we needed to take you through a stable portal for medical care. Two, we're in Amity Park, Illinois, the hauntedest place on Earth. And three, that was Plasmius, one of my more persistent rogues. He wants me to be his son, and I've decided I'm not down for that at all. He's bad at taking no for an answer. Jason sits down in the passenger seat and goes to buckle the very strange-looking seatbelt. Danny lurches across the RV and grabs his hand with a, "Don't." Jason stares at him. Fenton seatbelts, meant to shock ghosts and ghost-adjacent beings, Danny explains. Why are you suddenly good at explanations now? Jason asks, instead of one of the many other questions he has. I'm not bad when I'm the only option, but if there's someone else around, my brain typically decides to go off on tangents. Also, I've explained these things quite a few times, and inventions are kind of my thing. He thinks for a moment. Well, I've never had to explain taking someone through a portal for medical... Wait. He thinks again. Wait, no, I've definitely had to do that before. So, yeah, I've had practice explaining all this. The ectoparasite and the whole you-don't-know-you're-a-ghost-adjacent thing was new, though. I'm pants at new explanations. Danny starts up the RV and backs carefully down the lawn, shoulder checking repeatedly and using all three mirrors judiciously. The RV made it through the trees just fine, so Jason doubts it really needs such consideration, but at least Danny seems to be a more careful driver than the rest of his family. Danny keeps up a stream of idle chatter all the way to a strange-looking house that, according to the sign outside, is Fenton Works. And here we are, Danny says, easing the RV to a stop beside the curb. Home, not so sweet home. Is that a blimp? Jason asked, peering out the windshield. Don't worry about it, Danny says, turning off the RV and heading to the door. Jason follows, definitely worrying about it. So while we're here, we'll be grabbing some stuff for you to take back to Gotham, just in case. A couple ghost weapons, so you can defend yourself in a fight. A thermos to catch any ghosts that do attack you. And definitely some purified ectoplasm for your coffee or tea. What? Jason asks. What was that last one? Danny makes a considering sound in his throat. Well, you could drink it straight, but it's more palatable with something to cover the taste of it. At least at first. He opens the front door and it instantly scrambles out of the way, pressing Jason against the siding of the house as his parents tear out the door. His mother snatches the RV keys from his grip without a word, and off they go, bolting to the RV. Get back here, Jazz screeches, hauling ass after them. But by the time she makes it to the doorway, they're gone. Damn it. Afternoon, Princess Jazz. Danny says, clearly taunting his older sister. Any luck today? Jazz plants her hand on his face and pushes, causing Danny to crush Jason against the siding. Oh, sorry, Jazz says, sticking out a leg and shoving her brother to the side, sending him careening into the bushes by the front door. You must be Jason. Jason nods, busy trying to haul Danny out of the plants by the back of his jeans. That's me, he says. And you're Princess Jazz. Jazz scowls but nods. I hate titles. Too bad, Danny sings, still halfway in the bush. Jason finally gets a good grip and yanks him upright, Danny spitting bits of greenery everywhere.
The poor guy is scratched to hell and back, leaves and twigs stuck in his hair and clothes, and by the time he and Jason have picked out as much as they can, Jazz has already turned and headed inside. Danny gestures Jason in ahead of him, then shuts the door and leads Jason up the stairs and into what must have been his old room. There are old faded spots on the ceiling in the shape of stars, and discolored patches of wall where old pictures and posters must have hung. It's rather depressing, honestly. Yeah, I hate it up here too, Danny says, then casually reaches through the solid wall and pulls out another one of those futuristic containers Red Huntress had. Fenton thermos for you, he says, handing over what is indeed a thermos. Most ethical way to restrain a ghost. And I'm sure I've got a wrist ray tucked around in here somewhere. Danny's still digging around inside the wall, and Jason takes a moment to check in with himself. The danger is past, he's getting new gear for any future danger, and he might actually have a solution to the pit. All good things. So now that he's done checking in with himself, he decides it's time to check Danny out properly. He looks over the king as he fumbles around with one arm inside the wall. Danny's big, he already knew that, but looking over him with no danger and a relatively clear head, Jason can see just how big he really is. The man's built like a tank, with absolute tree trunks for legs and arms for days. Jason wants to sink his teeth into his ass. He knows Danny is at least a little attracted to him, so he might as well go for it. But just as he's about to open his mouth, Princess Jazz comes in the door behind them, and by the look on her face, Jason knows she's about to start some shit. So, Jason, have you ever thought about being consort to a king? Not the shit he thought she'd be starting, that's for sure. Danny rushes over with a high-pitched shriek, but it's far too late. Jason's already been thinking about it. Jason's brain is immediately thrown back into his Regency novels, and he smirks at just how much he's thought about that in the past, and just how viscerally the idea still thrills him. Oh, you have, Jazz crows, and Danny bats at her in an attempt to shut her up. She does not, in fact, shut up. Well, Danny here just so happens to be looking for a consort. And you're exactly his type. What do you say to lingerie, Jason?
Oh, shit. Oh, no. That's definitely one of his more private kinks, and one he doesn't get to indulge in very often.
The thought of wearing lingerie for Danny, his king, is... Jason feels his face practically light on fire, and when he glances over, Danny's not doing much better. I cannot. Believe you, Jazz, Danny shouts as he grabs his sister, lifting her bodily over his head and marching toward the door. Out! Out with you! Jazz is laughing uproariously, and Jason can easily track their progress through the house and out the front door. When he hears the door slam shut, he doesn't know whether he wants Danny to be inside or outside the house. The stairs creak. Inside, then. Jason finds himself pleased, and he feels the urge to hide his face in his hands. He doesn't do it, but he definitely feels the urge. Instead, he stands and faces the door. So when Danny enters, red-cheeked and wide-eyed, Jason is waiting patiently for him. I'm starting to understand why you didn't want me to meet your family. Danny laughs and rubs the back of his neck. It's adorable for a man his size to do something so shy. Yeah, Jazz is usually pretty great, though, and the Munchkins are the best. But yeah, sorry about her, Danny says. She found some of my magazines when I was younger, and she never lets me forget it. He freezes, then shuts his eyes after a second with a sigh and pinches his brow. Why did I tell you that? He mutters, more to himself. Jason chuckles, and just like that, the embarrassment starts to pass. Danny's just as embarrassed as he is, and that makes the whole situation a little easier to bear. Jason decides he can afford to play along. And hey, Maybe he'll even get a fun night or two out of this. He deserves at least that much for all this hassle. I don't know about a consort, he says, taking a step forward. Danny glances up at him and freezes, hand halfway lowered from his face. But I could be convinced to be a dalliance, I think, Jason continues, smirking at the gobsmacked look on Danny's face. He steps right up against Danny, causing the other man to take a quick breath. And I'm always down for lingerie, Jason says, channeling his inner cat burglar and purring the words. I love the way it feels on my skin. Danny makes the most adorable little meep of a sound, and Jason just smiles wide. Oh yeah, this could turn out to be a very fun end to a very terrible week. The end.